So now I know who all the people who aren't Ohio State fans are. So what we have in the readings today is really a remarkable lining up of how they all go together. And what I want to begin with is from the letter of St. James, because I think he has just such a clear understanding of how the human psyche works and what grinds our gears and all that sort of thing, and what we need to strive for in order to progress in the spiritual life and to be true Christians. And he notes, where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is disorder and every foul practice. And I think we can see very well how this occurs throughout the whole world, because I think we can easily say that the world, well, it always has been, but it's especially visible now, is full of jealousy and selfish ambition. What is the principle of life today other than let me do what I want and get all I want? Ambition and jealousy spring naturally out of those principles which we're just bombarded with all the time. And we see it precisely the same time, and it should be no surprise to us that because of that, we have disorder in the world, and we have every kind of foul practice that there is. None of this should be a surprise to us. James offers the alternative, the wisdom from above. He says that it is first of all pure, then peaceable, gentle, compliant, full of mercy and good fruits, without inconstancy or insincerity. These are all beautiful words to our ears and to our hearts. And yet we find it difficult to realize these in our lives. We find it difficult to make them take root. Even though James had said earlier in his letter that every good gift and every perfect grace is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, in opposition to the darkness and disorder that we experience, we find it hard to believe, because we're always coming up against people who are going to cause us troubles, or there arise in our hearts all sorts of difficulties, envies, judgments. And yet, the Lord has a way picked out for us. And how do we find it? Jesus points it out to his disciples. And I should say, as an aside, the Gospel of Mark is constantly pointing out how clueless the apostles were. And we can take some hope in that fact, that these men who were traveling around with Jesus all the time, Jesus Christ personally speaking to them, telling them all of the doctrines of truth in their own ears, they didn't get it at all. So I think that that can give us a little bit of hope when, you know, maybe we're confused about a thing or two. But Jesus also shows us what his plan is, and not just telling us. He would eventually show his disciples the necessity of the cross. But he begins now by showing them a little child. And in some places he says that his disciples must be like this little child. In other places he says that they must receive a little child such as this. And what all of that comes down to is us receiving God's teaching and his will in a simplicity of heart. Now, what does that mean? It means a certain purity and single-mindedness about what God's will is, what's true. A simplicity, a single-mindedness that is opposed to all of the different feelings and ideas that are constantly bombarding us from every side, from all sorts of voices, and even from within our own hearts. It's a challenge, but it is the principal weapon that we're given to fight all of these things, so that we aren't living for our passions, but rather for what has been revealed to us to be true, for living for love of God and love of neighbor. Our Lord Jesus Christ didn't found his law on what felt right. He founded it on love of God and love of neighbor, as the collect from our Mass says. And what this means is that we can look at any given situation and compare it to what we know from what either Jesus Christ has told us or from what we can reason about, what is just, what is merciful. And if we find that the feelings that are rising up in our hearts in any given situation are the things that the people around us are telling us, if they don't line up, then we have to, okay, take a breather, take a step back, and follow our Lord. This isn't an easy thing, and that's precisely the point. It's why our Lord had to die for us ultimately on the cross. And it's why his message at the cross made no sense to his apostles, who were more interested in serving what was good for them, in living for their personal ambition, for following their feelings wherever they might go. Our Lord Jesus Christ, on the other hand, didn't live for his passions. He lived for other people. He lived for the love that he had for each one of us. And ultimately, that called him to the cross, to suffer for our sakes. Because as we hear in the first reading, the way of the world wants to plot against the good, the just person. And no one was ever more just than our Lord Jesus Christ. The way of the world, the passions of man, want to put any act of justice to the test. They want to make us suffer for any good that we might do, for any truth that we might stand up for. And that can be hard to suffer through. Our Lord suffered on the cross, even to the end of his life, so that he could give us the strength that when we were tempted, when we were bombarded with all sorts of various feelings or words from others that confused us about what was right, we could take a step back and join ourselves to Christ on the cross and listen to his word, to receive his word in the simplicity of a child, rather than living for our own ambitions. And with this purity of heart, with this single-mindedness of purpose, the chain of sin is broken, and we begin bit by bit to receive the peace that our Lord desires for us and for the whole world. Praise be Jesus Christ, now and forever.